Oi, lads, did you miss out on the Jaren's Outpost Kickstarter and wish you weren't such a big doofus? Well, fear not. Late pledges are now open and they'll be open for a little while. So just head to Kickstarter, search for D&Ds for Nerds or Jaren's Outpost and slam that late pledge button.
Sanspants Radio, Australia's most procedurally generated podcast network.
Once, long before Tiffany or Sir Hector were even born, there lived a man named Jordan Grace, or, as he had recently become, Sir Grace. Newly knighted and looking to prove himself, he accepted a quest investigating disappearances in the small town of Shaybrook. Little did he know that this was the first step on what was to become a strange and dangerous life. Welcome to episode 3 of Forth from Grace, part 1. The Hag. Previously,
I turned to Grattan. How do you feel about running?
Grattan says, I would, yes.
No shame in it. No shame in it.
Grattan sprints. Mm-hmm. Are you following?
Yeah.
No. You can hear him falling behind you, calling out, "Come back, food."
That's the being that followed me. It was singing a song talking about a mother. Mother said...
It's got a title called Emmanuel of Monsters. Edition 1.
All of... Initially, I guess I was thinking that the trauma to the chest of Gita might have been from, I don't know, say, the swinging fists of the half-ogre. But I can't see any of the half-ogre's tracks here in some way responsible for what's been going down. But I believe also that there is at least a second party as well, someone who can cast spells, possibly change their shape.
Whoever can down their tankard the fastest wins.
This town rolls.
The meeting to discuss your findings from the forest ends. And then you retire for the night.
Do people stick around after the meeting just to casually hang out?
No, not really. Okay. It's quite late by the time it's done.
That's fair. Well,
if you want, like, people do slowly leave. So I would say William, who has a wife and a newborn child, leaves first.
Fair.
Then Birkinth, who also has a husband and several older children.
Yeah.
Then Thudu, who likes a drink.
Yeah.
And finally, Mally kind of dawdles at the end.
I probably stick around, just not necessarily as part of the investigation, but just for the social side of it, chatting people, getting to know them.
Mally, quite clearly, when it's just you and her, Mally quite clearly seems troubled that Gita was tricked or duped potentially by someone pretending to be her.
Well, I mean, you can't blame yourself, Mally. Like, that's the kind of thing, if anything's out of our hands, that is, you know.
She seems calmed by that.
Yeah. I understand, though, that that's gotta hurt. It's a frightening world out there, I guess. Previously, anything like this was done with the knight that I trained under, that I squired under. So, you know, I hope I'm doing it right. But even doing, you know, investigations with him and squiring for him, you know, you would come across stuff like this. I wouldn't blame yourself for this. I absolutely wouldn't.
Mally nods again slowly and says, "Thank the gods we have you."
For sure. I mean, again, I'm just one man. I wouldn't call myself divinely sent. I'm just doing a job. But hopefully we can sort it out.
It's good work you do, Sir Knight.
I give like a kind of a humble nod, you know. Yeah, well, hopefully I can help people.
All right.
Well, I'm going to retire to bed. You have a good night. And then I'll go to sleep.
Next day, what would you like to do?
Next day I'd like to group up with Mally and with Thudu and make for the site of the children's disappearance.
Thudu's busy again.
That's okay. I'll do it with Mally, and if anybody else wants to come, if Grattan Wood is free or whatever, or Robert.
Birkin.
Robert, no last name given.
Robert probably isn't going to go.
That's fair.
If you go ask Grattan, Grattan's not going to go either. Birkinth.
Okay. If you ask her, we'll come with as sure. well. So it's you, Mally, and Birkinth head mm-hmm. towards the site of the children's disappearance.
Cool.
Birkinth is probably pretty good to take. She was quite familiar with the family of the children.
For sure. Did you know Gita? I'll ask Birkinth as we make our way there.
No, I didn't know him. Mally knew him quite well. She
yeah,
nods.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, just checking. Just checking.
You arrive at the small crook mm. where there's a bit of meadow nearby. It's very beautiful and picturesque here. Mm.
Lovely. Well, I guess we'll go, is there like I guess we'll investigate where they disappeared first and then maybe chat to the parents.
Mm. Oh, no, Birkinth says, if you have any questions for the parents, you can ask me.
Okay, for yeah. sure.
Are they, sure. they're grieving.
No, yeah, totally, totally. Okay, well, I'll just give a look around the meadow.
You search the area. In the meadow, you find the first thing you find is a bunch of sticks, twigs, just whatever you could find on the ground has been all piled together in like a little fort of oh, sorts.
Okay, like a children's, kind of like yeah. a treehouse.
Yeah. It's on the ground, yeah, however, kind sure. of sheltered in a bush. Inside, you find a small clay pot that has been cracked and broken. You find a couple of toys as okay. well, maybe a doll and maybe a little wooden sword. Also,
yeah.
You also find by the river, there are a set of giant tracks, presumably yeah. the half ogres.
Okay. Okay. I turn to what's the other one? Not Mally.
Birkinth.
Birkinth. I'm going to call them Cranley. No.
Birkinth. A lot of names.
Birkinth, the mirror and the nail that the children had, did they disappear with them? Or do we still have them?
No, she rummages in a bag. I collected them because I thought we might need them. She hands them to you.
I'd like, yeah, to collect them and put them in my coin purse with the wolf coin.
You note that, well, the iron nail is iron.
Yeah.
But the mirror as well is completely made out of iron. It's a common thing because mirrored glass.
Sure, for sure.
Isn't really a thing. So the mirror itself is just made out of iron that is polished to a sheen.
Okay, so we don't know where the children acquired this nail and mirror?
They came back with them from here.
Came back with them. Do I know anything about... You know what? I would like to open up my Emmanuel de Monster.
Yeah.
And I would like to look for anything relating to iron as a magical material.
Iron as a magical material.
Well, as a weakness, like something that a monster might be weak against. Do you know what I mean?
Ghosts.
Okay.
Ghosts do not like iron. The Emmanuel would be very specific on that. Cold iron, which is a specific type of iron made by made cold, basically iron that has not seen fire, only being worked by cold tools, is good against fey.
Fae, okay.
So fae creatures include things like fairies, sprites, a creature called a quickling, which the book would describe as the worst of all the small creatures.
My Emmanuel de Monster's least favorite small creature.
You would also see that it is closely related to the Feywild, which is another plane of existence that mirrors the material plane. Iron is used to block entrances to the Feywild because the Feywild requires a place of natural wonder or beauty to create a natural crossing point. Okay. And iron is considered an ugly, brutal thing.
Sure.
So it can hamper or completely destroy a crossing to the Feywild.
Okay.
You would also, if you keep reading, you find hags are a type of fey.
Okay.
And you find that nymphs and sirens are types of fae. Nymphs. There is a type of siren that lives on... So this is, obviously, you might not think siren.
Yeah.
But there is a type of siren that lives on the land.
Okay, cool. Maybe I'll turn to Thudu and...
And yeah. Will-O-Wisps. But Will-O-Wisps are not typically considered intelligent.
Will-O-Wisps. I'd like to turn to the two ladies I'm with and be like... This town, I don't want to call it superstition because obviously so often it ends up being true, but fey creatures, the fey realm, are there any, I don't know, I suppose local legends, something like that?
Birkinth says, yes, I think I do remember some tale about the summer court and the winter court.
Okay.
There was some dispute. Something to do with the Feywild, not really the material plane.
Sure.
But the long and short of the story is that they are like courts, like royal courts that exist in the Feywild.
Okay.
And all Fey were once part of one court or the other until they decided to throw out creatures that were twisted and dark, that did not match their ideas of beauty.
Okay.
And I know that creatures such as half-breeds, I think mm-hmm. they're called, and hags were among them. And apparently one such creature, like a hag,
mm-hmm.
Found its way here when it was ousted.
All right, hag in my thing and circle it. Who's the oldest person in town?
The oldest person in town? Well, that would be Dwowin.
Dwowin?
Dwowin.
Would I be able to speak to them? If it wouldn't be too much trouble.
Dwowin would probably talk to you, but only maybe out of politeness. She doesn't like being disturbed.
That's okay. Is there anything I could bring her to maybe make her more inclined?
Birkinth and Mally look at each other, then look back at you. A beer.
Okay, well, that I can do. Yeah, but perhaps if I could just have a conversation with her at some point. I would like to, the parents of Ansys and Annette, were they, superstitious sorts?
No, they weren't, Birkinth says.
Okay.
Not incredible. Well, no more than usual.
Sure. I guess I'm just wondering if a child disappears in the forest, and no one's around to hear it, no. If a child disappears in the forest and comes back and you're worried that something fey may have taken them, would you yourself give them a nail and a mirror, so some iron maybe to protect them? But I assume...
No. They came back with them. Yeah.
Well, that is very intriguing. I'd like to give the place just like one more once over. I'd like to, just to cross some things off my list, I'd like to go and investigate. There's like is there a brook nearby, or do you say like a crook in the road?
Yeah, a crook. There's a tiny little bit of water.
I'd like to go investigate that to see if I can cross sirens off my list.
You can tell that the crook has no like the ye olde Emmanuel of Monsters describes that a siren that exists in a land or like a body of water on land needs to exist on a lake or a river, okay. Like a still body of water.
Sure, sure.
So this would not meet the definition for a siren.
I cross siren off in my list, in my book.
You've also got the little kid's cubby.
Yes.
And the tracks.
That's right. I'll go into the cubby and I'll investigate. I want to crack open that cracked pot. See if I can see anything inside it.
I get a bad boy card.
Oh, no.
It's not a pot. It's like a bowl.
Okay.
When you turn that over, you can tell that it just seems like discarded pottery.
Okay. I put it to the
side. Probably to play house with.
Yeah, for sure. I search the interior. I search the, like, amongst the sticks, see if kids have tied anything to them. I try to imagine what games maybe they'd have played.
You find a great deal of toys hidden amongst or hidden in the little cubby. Mm. You find more toys than, frankly,
you would imagine peasant children should have.
Yeah, it seems like too many. And they're not great quality.
Yeah.
But they're, like, nice. And there's a lot of them.
Birkinth, I say. Could you come in here, please?
Birkinth walks over and crouches down.
You knew the children well, and I...
Yes.
I know peasant children tend to have maybe only one or two toys. Are any of these toys...
No, my gosh. As soon as you show the wealth of toys, she says, no, this is far... I don't know where they got these. They weren't taking them from town. This looks like enough toys for every child in town.
Do some of the toys look very old? Or is it hard to tell age? They've just been in the elements.
No, a lot of them look... A lot of them look homemade, but made with some level of competency.
Okay.
Actually, I would say that all of them look homemade, but with some level of competency. A lot of them bear like a little tag on them that says from Granny.
From Granny? I'd like to write from Granny in my notes and then write mother for the ogre and like do a line connecting them. What's the next nearest town to here, I ask?
Next nearest town?
Yeah.
That would probably be Tipple.
Okay. Is Tipple within the same...
Tipple is quite far away, okay. Far to the south.
Sure. I just wanted to check proximities. Okay. Well, I'll come out of the copy and I'll check the tracks.
All right. Oh, another good boy card.
Oh my God, I'm raking them in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You check the ogre, the half-ogre tracks, and the half-ogre has made no effort to conceal where it's going from or to or anything like that, and the mud here is fresh enough that it's like a perfect cast.
Okay.
You can see the half-ogre tracks lead a little away from the cubby to a slight hill, like very close.
Yeah, for sure.
Very close. And on that slight hill, you can see half-ogre footprints mixing with children footprints.
How many? Two sets?
Two sets.
Okay.
It looks like children and half-ogre in play. Mm. The tracks lead off into the forest.
Well, the children... why would you want children, whatever is taking them? I look back at my list of possible fae. I cross out ghost because that doesn't seem to make sense. Then I would like to will-o'-the-wisp, I'll cross out no spells. Nymphs are sea creatures, yeah?
Nymphs, no, they're not sea creatures.
They're tree creatures.
Yeah, they're typically creatures of a forest. Well, they're creatures of anywhere beautiful and natural, to
all
be
right,
honest.
All right,
it could be in a forest, yeah.
Do some question marks after nymphs, some question marks after hags.
Emmanuel of Monsters would call nymphs creatures of lighteth and goodeth that would not dwell with any creatures of darketh or evileth intent, unless such creatures were thoroughly dead.
Mm, all right, maybe I cross out nymphs. Okay, hags, question marks after. Sprites, quicklings, and fairies, I'm not sure. Quicklings. I don't know. All right, well, that presumably is the direction they went. What time is it? Probably like midday, yeah?
It's just before midday.
Okay. All right, let's get a beer. Let's go chat to Dwawin, and then see where we are. You said... Mally, that Gita said that it was like the old days, yeah? Things that were returning.
Yeah, things were like the old times.
Okay.
I'm not sure what he meant by that.
Circle hags again. All right, I'm going to go to the tavern, mm-hmm. to the Broken Hammer, and procure a beer.
Okay.
A traveler.
And then Mally takes you to Dwawin's mm-hmm. house.
Knock on the door.
It's a kind of a little hovel. A elderly female dwarf answers the door. Her beard is so long that it touches her toes, mm-hmm. and you can see that her eyes were once a beautiful amber, but now have become dulled. You can tell that she's blind in both eyes. She has a narrow face and straight red hair besides. She wears, though, very modest garments. She looks like she might be... She looks like she could have taken a vow of poverty.
Okay. Good afternoon, Dwawin. Mm. My name is Sir Jordan of House Grace, and I was wondering if I could ask you a couple of questions. I've brought you some beer as a gift.
She, like, peers as closely at you as she can, and she has to get, like, right up in your face to do it. Maybe she gestures for you to get in closer.
I crouch down.
Beer, she says, holding out a hand.
I guide it into her hand.
She starts drinking and turns around and gestures for you to follow.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
You sit in her little hovel. There's like a stump table.
Cool.
And smaller stump chairs.
I sit presumably with my knees up around my breasts, kind of like.
Yeah. It's kind of sized. It's even strange because it's sized for a halfling, not even a dwarf. She sits
it's
down.
It's cheaper, I guess.
She sits down at the table as well.
Yeah.
Picks off the table a horn and jams it in her ear.
So where I'm sure you're aware of it, there are been some disappearances lately. The woods have taken an ominous sort of turn. I was chatting to my good friend Mally here, and she said that in the past there was some kind of town legend about the summer and winter courts almost releasing some ill creatures into the woods many years ago. And we've had one of the disappeared people talking about the old days. I just wondered if you had, I don't know, any opinion on this, if this reminded you of anything that had happened once before.
Ah. When you start talking, she leans in so that the horn jammed in her ear is kind of right at your lips. She leans back. Ah, yes, I know about the summer and the winter court. Long ago, before even my parents were but whippersnappers, long before even that, as far back as memory and time exists, there was, within the Feywild, the summer court and the winter court. They were like night and day. One was open and beautiful and warm, and the other was cold and awesome and rude. Sorry, I couldn't help it. And the other was cold and awe-inspiring, or in every way that the word can mean.
I nod.
Inspiring of awe. Neither was good nor truly bad, but there were differences. One, the summer court, balmy and beautiful. Its queen decreed that all fae should look and be as one, and Winter Queen decreed the same.
Right.
But unfortunately for hags and fae of low caste, they did not meet the summer or winter court's images of what was fae and what was not. For they were not beautiful as the summer court, and they did not inspire awe as the winter court.
Right.
They were ugly and hated, and they were driven out of the Feywild into our world. And it is said that north of Shaybrook was a crossing to the Feywild where they might pass.
Okay.
It happened so long ago, but brave knights such as yourself rose up and forced the hags from our world as well, scattering them to death or to the Feywild. It is possible on a summer's day or a deep winter's night to still hear or see a hag at a fey crossing.
Has fey crossings typically were blocked up by iron, correct?
A fey crossing, it can only exist at a place of beauty or wonder within our world. Such places can exist almost anywhere in the natural world, but worked stone or metal, man-made cities, they destroy fey crossings wherever they exist. One might destroy a fey crossing with worked stone or iron.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dwawan. I appreciate your candidacy and for being willing to talk with me.
And now a quick word from our sponsor. Also, hey, D&D is fun, but if you're wishing that we could hear Jackson or Zamet waxing poetic about video games they've played and give them a score based on a frankly baffling rating system I refuse to understand, then do I have news for you. Thumb Cramps is a show by Jackson, Zamet, Dusha, and occasionally Cass, where they, as my dad calls it, ignore Total Overdose, the most pivotal game of the early 2000s. So, if you like the sound of that, or if you want to know why my dad keeps calling them total hacks, then head on down to sanspantsradio.com and search for Thumb Cramps.
She sips from the beer.
I lean back in my chair, or on my stool. Do you think it's unreasonable for me to say that perhaps a hag is what we're dealing with here? I mean, it would explain the magic.
Oh, yes. A hag is surely the cause of our problems. But what hag? There are many.
Oh, I open up Emmanuel's Book of Monsters to H4 Hag.
It's actually alphabet. It's actually ordered by size.
This stupid book.
The problem is that some of the sizes are only speculated or vary.
Emmanuel, you fool.
Well, you need to go to M-ish for medium-ish size. You see, there are many different types of hag. Mm-hmm. There's green hag. The wretched and hateful, doth wretched and hateful hags green dwell in dying forests, that's or lonest of swamps or misty moors, making hometh in caves.
Okay, well that doesn't, it's sort of more of a woodland area, right? Not really swamp.
They have obsessioneth with tragic events. Okay. There is, but also thine night hag, slyth and subverteth.
It's good to imagine Sir Grace finger under subversive. I mean, like going back, being like subversive.
Thine night hag wanteth to see the virtuous turneth to villainy, love's kiss turn to obsession, and kindness to hate, and devotion to disregard, and generosity to selfishness.
I get it, Emmanuel's Book of Monsters.
Night hags taketh their perverse joy in corrupting those of mortals. They are, of course, soulmongers, stealing the souls of those sleeping. There iseth also the sea hag. Sea haggaths live in dismal and polluted underwater lairs.
Doesn't seem right.
Of course, one must also considereth the anise hag. They lair in mountains or hills. Despite being hunchbacked and hump-shouldered, they are the largest and most physical of all kinds, standing almost, one might assume, 8 feet. They enjoy tormenting. They enjoy corrupting children, and they enjoy being a mother.
Circle anus hag.
There is, of course, and finally, the behoover. The behoover hag. Behoover hags live in wintereth lands. They have cold hearts that are attracted to selfish actions, and they are awful to beholden.
I fear what we're dealing with here, if it is indeed a hag, is probably the anise hag.
Tormenteth of the weak. Although an anise hag can easily tear a grown maneth apart, they enjoy hunting children, preferring their flesheth above all others. Oh. They use the flayeth of skin of such of their victims to make supple leather, and a hag's lair often shows the signs of industry.
You said that the story of the hags coming into our realm, they were story. It happened back when your parents were children.
Yes.
So do you remember a time where the forest was as it is now, or is this the first time it's happened?
First time in my memory.
Okay, I'm just trying to piece together, I guess, what could have caused the hag to become active.
Anise hags leave tokens of their cruelty at the edges of forests and other areas they claim. In this way, they provoke fear and paranoia in nearby villages and settlements. To an anise hag, nothing is sweeter than turning a vibrant community into a place paralyzed by terror. They are children corruptors. When an anise hag feels especially cruel, she disguises herself as a kindly-looking elderly woman, approaching a child in a remote place and gives it an iron token that it can use it to confide in her. Over time, Granny convinces the child that it's okay to have bad thoughts and do bad deeds.
As I read this, I finger the coin that I have in my pocket and the little mirror and the nail.
Tribe Mother. Much in the way that they befriend children in order to corrupt them, anise hags have a tendency for adopting a group of trolls, ogres, or other loutish creatures, ruling them through brute strength, verbal abuse, and superstition. And then the book continues. The anise hag has its skills lying in those of deception and perception.
What accent is
it? It is resistant unto the coldeth and all weapons that are non-magical in nature. It has upon itself the innate spell-casting ability to maketh itself disguise or create a fog of clouds.
Yeah.
It is most dangerous upon its crushing hug.
I like to imagine that Emmanuel de Monsters is one of those books ostensibly written by Emmanuel de Monster, but if you read through it, you're like, there's like 40 different people. Like, you know how Hans Christian Andersen would just take folk tales and slam it in the middle of their story? It's just like a hodgepodge. Is there a blacksmith in town? I ask.
Mally.
William
is the closest they have. He knows how to work metal, but he's a better carpenter than he is an ironsmith.
Okay. Do I think cold iron would damage this hag?
Cold iron would overcome its resistances, yes.
Cool, because I just don't have any magical weapons.
Mm. You would... So, yeah, it's resistant to cold and non-magical weapons.
Yeah, cool.
Otherwise, it doesn't seem to have any active weaknesses. Cold iron will hurt
If I can get over that resistance, that's all I need. All right. Yeah. Thank you so much, Bowen. I appreciate it. You have a wonderful day.
You too.
I get up and leave.
Where are you going?
I'll go to the blacksmith. I'll go to...
Will Owen,
yeah.
Can I help you? He's in his workshop.
I've got quite a favor to ask of you, Willowin, if that's all right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know much about blacksmithing, but I may be in the need of some cold iron. I know that's complicated to make, but I've been told that you're the best in town.
They're not wrong. I am the best in town. Let me look into this. Yes, I could maybe help you with that. I don't know.
I don't need much, just a spear tip's worth.
A spear tip I could make.
That's all I need.
You'll have to give me a knight.
That's okay. I wouldn't want to head out now anyway. Guess I'm doing this alone, though, that means. Unless the creature that I believe is responsible for the disappearances and for the deaths can only be damaged by cold iron or magical weapons. In the town, you wouldn't have magical weapons, would you? I feel silly asking.
Actually, we might have something that can help you.
Okay.
Maybe leave that with me for now.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it. If the magical weapon is something the town cannot spare, I know a lot of villages that I visited in the past have had heirlooms or sacred weapons to the town. I wouldn't ever ask you to destroy them, but if you have something you're willing to spare, well, it may be all it'll take. I take my spear off my back out of its sheath and I like place it on the ground in the workshop. But a cold iron tip to this would do me a wonder of favor.
I can try to work on a cold iron tip, spear tip for that. Otherwise, a magical weapon. Yes, no, I think we might have something for that.
Okay.
All right. I need you to grab Mally and Thudu and tell Thudu to go to the guild hall and speak with Illies.
Okay, sure. I'll get on that right now.
Yes. Tell Illies what you need and say that I will pay them back.
Okay, for sure. And I'm sure the capital can provide recompense for, you know, anything that I've taken or you're owed.
Yes.
All right. I'll leave him to it. And right. I'll go find Thudu and Mally.
All right. You grab both of them in a rush and you head towards the guild hall. Elise is, you learn on the way, an artisan, rather. She's like a glass blower.
Okay.
And she makes fittings with glass. So, cool. Like, if you need a stoppered lid on, like, a
glass bottle or something like that. Yeah, for sure.
As you're walking back with, or, like, half running back with Mally and Thudu, they say not to stare at Elise.
Okay, I wouldn't.
She has an affliction.
Sure, for sure.
Elise, when you get to the guild hall, she's working in one of the furnaces. She has, when she turns around, a beastly appearance. She has short gray hair and large blue eyes, but she looks like a half werewolf, if such a thing could exist.
Elise, I am Sir Jordan of House Grace. I explain the situation to her. We are in need of a magical weapon of some kind. Even
he better pay me back.
He said he would. He said he would.
Very well then.
Elise leaves and returns with a glass box.
Okay.
Contained within the glass box are two green, glowing, shimmering with energy crossbow bolts.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you.
No, arrows. Sorry, arrows.
Okay, cool.
These are magical projectiles.
Sure. Okay.
She hands them to you. Be careful.
Okay. You won't want these back, correct?
If they are used correctly, they should not return.
Sure. Okay. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you, Ilias.
All right. What do you do?
We'll head back to the blacksmithy, I guess. And on the way back, I'll be like, what's wrong with her?
She came under some affliction a while back, a werewolf bite. She was lucky. She's been cured, kind of.
I can say, poor unfortunate soul. All right, well.
It is, unfortunately, the danger of she used to be an adventurer. All right, you are lucky, Sir Grace. When you arrive back, it takes an extra hour after you arrive back, but slowly and surely, Willian is able to construct a cold iron spear tip.
Cool. I fix it to the tip of my spear, roping it down. All right.
I'm going to say, though, that it is not a perfect make.
Yep.
So you will take a -1 penalty to all attacks.
That's fair. Hey, as long as I can get over that resistance, because otherwise I'm just... I have two arrows. Which, to be honest, I feel like if I go and do this alone, that I will be in dire straits. I don't think that I am competent and I am confident, but I am also just one man. So Mali or Thudu, if you would accompany me...
We'll both help you.
However, like I said, the creature has a magical resistance to anything that's not cold iron or a magical weapon. Are either of you good with a bow?
Thudu shakes her head. No.
Mali?
Mali nods. Yes, I can fire an arrow.
I present the two arrows to Mali. Are the arrows made of glass or metal?
They're made of glass, yeah.
Okay,
cool. The box is made out of glass and the arrows are made out of glass.
What do I know about magical weapons?
It's difficult to make, expensive.
I guess my question would be, if we smelted this glass down and turned it into two new spear tips... Would all three of us have a weapon that we could use against? Or
you would need someone who knew how to use the magic.
To magically smelt down a... Okay, yeah. Yeah. Cool. That's okay. Well, in that case, I'll just give the two arrows to Mali.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mali says, what's the plan?
Okay. I would never want to attack... Ogres don't have that resistance, do they?
No. An ogre is an ogre is an ogre.
Okay. Well, an ogre is going to be... If we try to attack the Annis Hag, or we try to venture into the Annis Hag's lair, the ogre will be there to defend her, which means that it's probably cleverer to attack the ogre first, maybe separate from the Annis Hag. Mm. Now, when I was in the forest earlier, it was just me and the ogre. Perhaps if I'd had some... If it had not just been more than just me, we would have been able to take the ogre down. And in doing that, we've gotten rid of the muscle the Annis Hag has, if you know what I mean.
Yes, no, I understand.
So perhaps we bait the ogre out. I mean, okay, how about we just head into the forest, one of us alone, the others hidden in the trees. We wait until perhaps the ogre comes our way, and then we all come out and ambush him.
Perhaps we should lay a trap, Mali says.
That's clever. That's very clever. My fear is that the only bait I think the ogre would go for is perhaps a child. And that feels, I don't know.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Mali pipes up saying, yeah. You said that the ogre chased you.
Yes, it did.
Do you think you could just get it to chase you again into a trap?
Yeah, I mean, I reckon if the ogre would have come for me, yes. And I suppose if we spend enough time in I'll do finger quotes, its forest, then perhaps it would. Yeah. What kind of trap can we build? It's huge, so pit trap's probably not going to work.
A pit trap might work.
Do you have the manpower?
Well, a pit trap might work if we put spikes in it.
That's true. That's true. All right.
We could get a couple of the woodsmen to come and help us. I think we could grab or round up, I don't know, maybe fire or holy water. Does that work against it?
Emmanuel's Book of Monsters.
No, it does not. Holy water is used. Holy wateth. Only thine holeth of water. Blessed and kissed upon by the gods, can only burneth those that are irrecoverably evil and from evil-eth locations.
I like to imagine.
Or the dead.
I like to imagine in the entry for Ogre, it's like, if thou wishest to use holy water uponeth thine ogre to vanquish it, thou art thine world's largest imbecile. No, probably not holy water, but spikes. The ogre seems like a physical entity to me.
We can get alchemist fire, maybe.
That'd be good as well if it's in the pit to finish it off. All right, what time is it now?
It's maybe 3 or 4 p.m.
Okay, that seems about good ogre hunting time toward the evening. That's when we encountered it. All right, let's round up as many people as we can and start digging that pit. Is there like the clearing near where I kind of ended up my run when I was fleeing the ogre? Do you reckon that was a good area to dig a pit?
You could dig it around there.
Yeah, because then I can run into the copse of trees. Yeah. All right, well, I'll kind of like draw a little map maybe in my notebook, open it up and present like, hey, here's roughly a good idea of where we could do it.
All right, so you do that and you grab maybe 10 or 20 woodsmen, head out into the woods and begin digging.
Cool.
How deep do you want them to dig?
It's got
to
be pretty deep. It's a ogre.
All right.
But it's also going to be a matter of time. So by the time the sun is setting, if we start at, say, 4, by 6:30, that's probably when we're going to have to stop.
Okay. Well, you get to around 6.
Yeah.
And the pit is maybe 10 feet deep, and you've got spikes to put at the bottom of it.
Yeah.
So the sun is beginning to set, but Mally says, we could just keep going.
Yeah, but how much beginning to set? How many hours left do I think I have
before
darkness?
The sun is dipping below the trees.
Okay. Well, let's dig for half an hour more. How about that?
You dig for half an hour more. Nothing happens, and you've made the pit maybe 5 feet deeper.
It'll have to do us. I don't want everyone here at night. I don't want everyone in danger.
You plant the stakes, cover it as best you can, and then Mally will hide up in a tree.
Cool.
Thudu maybe just takes some cover somewhere. Thudu is wearing, she's taken off, she wears chainmail underneath her clothes. She's taken off her clothes and she's just wearing the chainmail now.
Yeah.
She has a big Viking ass looking helmet that she puts on her head. And as she puts it down, she gets to like really thump it down because the nose guard is no longer in place for her nose. So she like nearly severs her own nose, putting the helmet on. But then she arms herself with a shield and a mace and she hides in a bush.
Great. All right. I will go back to, I guess, where I first encountered the ogre, plant my ground and wait.
Will Sir Grace's plan survive contact with the enemy? Find out next time on Fall from Grace, Part 1, The Hag.
Thanks for listening. If you want to help support this show and all the other shows we do here at Sans Pants Radio, then why not subscribe to SansPantsPlus.com? For as little as $5 a month, you could have access to a whole bunch of bonus shows and content. Once again, that's SansPantsPlus.com.